From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the Republican Party of Texas files a lawsuit to stop the early voting. And as President Trump refuses to promise a peaceful transition of presidential power, there are rising questions about if this election is going to break American democracy.
This is not going to be a normal election. That I'm pretty confident about. And everyone should think about what their own role is in protecting democracy.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic and concerns about safety while voting in person, Texas Governor Greg Abbott used his emergency executive powers to add 6 days to early voting. So, starting Tuesday, October 13th, Texans can head to the polls. Unless a lawsuit filed this week by the Republican Party of Texas and a number of current and former Republican office holders put a stop to that. They don't want to see early voting. To find out why, I spoke with Harris County Republican Party Chair Keith Nielsen, who was part of the lawsuit.
We're concerned about the precedent this sets that will definitely affect future elections. So, obviously we love our governor, and he was in a difficult position with COVID and uncharted territory. But looking at exactly what the county clerk's doing and how the issues that they have with running the election and expanding this election, it doesn't look like they have it all together. So we're very concerned about the integrity of the election and what this does to the future elections, if future problems. I don't think it's a good precedent to set without looking at it through the legislative process.
Now, this was something that the governor did using his emergency powers, which the governor has, to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. And it was to relieve crowding at the early voting sites to possibly make voting easier and more safe. Is that a concern?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, looking at it from that point of view at the time, and because, we believe the county clerk is taking advantage of that situation. Not only, I mean, the week early was to expand the opportunity in this crisis, but now we have 10 o'clock voting, we have 24-hour voting. It seems to be out of control, and it just seems to be weakening the integrity of the election. So we're concerned about it.
And do you see that this might not be a good look for Republicans who have signed on to this lawsuit? It does appear that this is anti-voting.
Well, I don't look at it as anti-voting. I look at it as that we are going to get an official view from the courts on what the what scope of powers the governor has for the election process. So the main focus is the integrity of the election, and we're concerned about the integrity of the election. That's our main thing. One vote that is cast illegally, is an impact on another voter. So we don't want to cancel out somebody's vote. We want to make sure that this process is people are accessible, but without ruining the integrity of the election process.
Okay, so could you help me understand how having an extra week of early voting would increase voter fraud?
Well, I mean, it's extra voting. Extra week of voting, it's extended voting hours, it's 24-hour voting, voting, it's, dropping off your mail ballots, it's a combination of things. So when we start looking at the whole picture on how this is, rolling out, it doesn't appear from some of the issues that we've seen, it doesn't appear that the integrity of the voting is going to there. It just seems like we're weakening the integrity. So I don't think the risk of making it more accessible outweighs the integrity of the our system.
And the Texas Supreme Court has already decided on some challenges to the governor's emergency powers during the pandemic, and they have ruled in favor of the governor, saying that he does have broad powers during an emergency during this pandemic. I mean, you say it sets a precedent, but it's all confined to a major statewide emergency.
Well, and we'll just, you know, in the end, we'll have a clear vision about what can happen and how we can move forward in this election and future elections.
Keith Nielsen is the chair of the Harris County Republican Party. He and other Republicans are suing Governor Greg Abbott to halt early voting, which is now set to start on Tuesday, October 13th. Voting rights organizations in Texas are reacting to the lawsuit, saying this is just another example of the anti-democracy agenda that has become central to the Republican Party. Wesley Story is the spokesperson for Progress Texas.
Extending the early voting period was one of the few logical steps that Governor Abbott has taken to protect Texans during this pandemic. Specifically, it's one of the few logical steps he's taken to protect Texas voters. Texas Republicans have refused to expand vote by mail during this pandemic, even though many voters and many advocates have asked for our legislators to expand voting by mail. And so this step was one that Abbott took specifically to protect voters and to help make it safer for Texans to vote in the upcoming election. So by suing to take that extension away, Texas Republicans are really showing their true colors. They're showing that they're afraid of the ballot box. They're showing that they're willing to do anything and everything it takes to suppress the vote in our state, including suing one of their own.
Like you said, suing one of their own, Republican Governor Greg Abbott. He will be defended by Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton. Is there a question about how vigorous the defense of this is going to be?
I think there is a valid question about how vigorous the defense will be. I don't know if we can put it past Ken Paxton to really not put that much effort into defending this decision, because he's shown in the past that he, just like many of his fellow Republicans, likes to suppress the vote and does not want Texas voters to be able to vote in this upcoming election. And so I don't know how much he agrees with this decision from the governor, and I'm not sure that we can really expect that much of a fight from Ken Paxton.
Alan West, the chairman of the Texas Republican Party, has said this is not about COVID. It's not about all these other things about making the ballot safe for people. This is about the law, the rule of law, the letter of the law, which he says if the governor wanted to do this and expand early voting hours, then he should have called a special session of the legislature and had it done that way.
I mean, listen, if this is about the rule of law, then they should be suing the governor for many of the other things that he's done during this pandemic, such as his fight against Austin and his threats to Austin for things that they've done to make it safer and reduce police brutality. So they can claim that Abbott is going beyond his executive authority, that he's going beyond his powers. But the fact of the matter is they're only suing him for things that they disagree with, and they're not suing him for things that they think really push forward their agenda. And so at the end of the day, this is about early voting, and this is about COVID-19. At the end of the day, if this lawsuit were to be successful, Texas voters would be losing a week of early voting. And at the end of the day, if this lawsuit were to be successful, Texas voters would be more unsafe because they'd be forced to fit their early voting period, forced to fit their voting into 2 weeks instead of 3 weeks.
If the governor had called a special session of the legislature to take on this issue and others dealing with this emergency pandemic, we don't even know what that would look like. How would we do the legislature during the pandemic?
Yeah, I think that that's something that I don't necessarily have the answer to, and it's something that the lawmakers have had meetings about in the past. They're not being super open about whether or not they're going to be meeting in person or what that's going to look like.
So there is a question of, having filed this lawsuit, is this going to cause more confusion at the polls with voters. And we don't know if it'll be, if this lawsuit will be successful or if it'll be immediately thrown out, but this still seems to be another way to confuse voters.
Yes, this is definitely another attempt for Republicans to confuse voters and make them uncertain of when exactly they're able to get out and vote. I would say for anyone listening, please get out and vote and keep up with the lawsuit, but also just keep up with your local election administrators and your local election websites, because they should have all of the information available.
Wesley Story is the spokesperson for Progress Texas. This week, when President Trump was asked by a reporter if he would abide by the American tradition of a peaceful handoff of presidential power if he should lose the election, he gave a disappointing answer.
Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transferal of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster. We want to have get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
Since then, the White House has tried to soften this refusal, but Trump's words stand, and Trump is feeding a dark mood in the nation that in this election we could see a direct attack on our democracy that should send chills down the spine of every American. Texas Congressman Lloyd Doggett, a Democrat, says we should take the president at his word, and in response, everyone should vote.
It's very alarming. I think he's making it clear for all of us that this election is really a choice between democracy and tyranny. He basically is delegitimizing the votes of millions of Americans. He would seize power through anti-democratic means, wants to place yet another vote on the Supreme Court in case he needs to turn to the courts. It's a death blow to democracy. I would just say that I thought Mitt Romney was courageous in his statement, and I believe that every Republican at every level of government should be asked whether they agree with Trump or they agree with Senator Romney, who condemned this as unthinkable and unacceptable. I believe that any Republican who does not immediately denounce this rejection of what I view as our sacred democracy that so many have spilt blood to protect, that person is really no longer fit to serve in office.
We are looking at an election day, November 3rd, that could be very turbulent. There could be any number of things that would happen on that day that would throw the election into chaos, a cyber attack, a breakdown in the grid, violence at the polling places. These are types of things that Trump and others could point to and saying there's questions about whether or not we had a legitimate election. And there's reporting happening from like Jeffrey Toobin at the New Yorker saying there's a plan afoot where the state legislatures could take over and assign electoral votes or just throw out the entire election on election day. These are types of things that you would normally write off as crazy paranoia and not take seriously. But when you have a president who is saying things like he said, it gives you pause. So have you heard this reporting? Do you know anything about it? Do you have a reaction?
Yes, I have a strong reaction. It may be paranoid, but they are out to get our democracy. That's my concern. They have a variety of paths to seize power, even if they do not win the election. That's one of the reasons I've encouraged all Texans to vote early. Their votes will be the first counted to remove Trump from office and express their preference on all our vital state and local races. We need to be prepared for this. We need to be asking every state legislative candidate, are you willing to support the majority of Texans in their votes, even if it's not your personal choice, because to do otherwise is to subvert our democracy. I hope that Texas goes for Biden, but every state legislator, regardless of their own preferences, should vote the way the majority of our state votes and protect the electoral process that's been in place since the founding of our country.
And I'm sure you want everyone to go vote regardless of where they are on the political field, you know, everyone should have a right.
Absolutely. Our democracy is stronger when everyone participates, win or lose. And that's what's so dangerous about what Trump is talking about, because the peaceful transition of power, the ability of Americans to disagree, but do so agreeably without violence, perhaps upset as I was after Trump won, but willing to move forward with our government and know America prospers and benefits when we have two strong political parties. I just fear that increasingly this is not about Democrats versus Republicans. It's about Democrats versus a cult, much like that around the third world tyrant that does not stick with any principles of the Republican Party, which did not even bother to have a national platform at their convention, I guess unsure of where Trump might move them next. But there is so much more on the ballot than Biden versus Trump. This really is about the future of American democracy.
Congressman Lloyd Doggett is a Democrat and represents the 35th District of Texas that covers parts of San Antonio and Austin. So the dark idea that somehow the results of the election could be overridden and Trump would retain the presidency despite losing the popular vote and the Electoral College, how is this an idea? Where does this stuff come from? Barton Gellman is a staff writer for The Atlantic magazine and the author of the article, The Election That Could Break America.
It's commonly thought, because this has been our experience for the past 150 years, that electoral votes have to be apportioned based on the popular vote in any given state. We vote, and then the electoral votes are cast in correspondence. But the Constitution doesn't actually say that. The Constitution says that each state legislature shall decide in the manner of its own choosing how the electors are named. And there are people inside the Trump orbit who are talking among themselves and to some state Republican legislators about the possibility of asking the legislators to take back the power to appoint electors from the people, so that if the election is going the wrong way and if Trump is claiming fraud and vote rigging and a irredeemably poisoned counting process, the legislators would say, well, the count has broken down. It's filled with fraud. We are going to decide the will of the people for ourselves and send a slate of electors that are committed to Trump. And it turns out that there are Republican-held legislatures in all six of the most closely contested battleground states.
That would be Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, and Arizona. You don't include Texas in that?
Well, Texas also has a Republican legislature. People smarter than me could argue that that is a close battleground state at this point.
Tell us how you know this. I mean, this is a dark story, a possibility of what could happen, but it doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem real.
There are so many things in the Trump era that were once unthinkable. I mean, it doesn't seem real to have a president who repeatedly and brazenly, frankly, refuses to say that he will respect the results of the election and allow for a peaceful transfer of power if he's defeated. He essentially says, I can't be defeated other than by fraud. He said 2 days ago, there won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. And this is a dark story. I'm not saying it's going to happen. And I carefully did not say that the Trump campaign intends this or plans it, but it is discussing contingency plans along these lines.
But you have spoken to high-placed individuals who have told you that there are conversations about this.
Yeah, well, for one thing, I have it on the record from the leader of the Pennsylvania Republican Party, who said that they have discussed it among themselves in the senior leadership of the Republican Party in Pennsylvania, and that he's discussed it personally with a member of the Trump campaign. I have a senior Trump legal advisor speaking on background, but I can't use the person's name, saying that they are considering it and spelling out how it would work. There are fairly extensive quotes from this advisor in my story in The Atlantic.
So what does the Biden camp say about this?
The Biden camp does not want to speak openly about this. They are thinking about it. They are planning for it. They were aware of the threat.
If this is someone's plan to have state legislatures step in these swing states, it helps them to have as much disruption as possible on Election Day. If there is something like a cyber attack or a grid breakdown or mass violence at polling stations, these are the type of things where you would just add more to the disruption and the chaos and say, that's what we did not have a fair election, therefore we're going to take this extreme measure. So should we be on alert on November 3rd for mass disruptions?
I think everyone should absolutely be on alert to expect highly unusual measures, to expect extra constitutional events, such as deployments of federal forces or organized violence or organized attempts to suppress the vote. This is not going to be a normal election. That I'm pretty confident about. And everyone should think about what their own role is in protecting democracy.
For this calculus to work, you have to have state legislatures and lawmakers from the Republican Party say, we're going to go along with it. They've given up basically on democracy, and they support having this authoritarian, dictatorial type of a system now. That seems like a long walk for a lot of people. It's still an American value to support democracy, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And our hope as a nation rests on the idea that Republicans will draw a line at some point and say, this far I go and I can't go any farther. And there are also legal reasons why it might not be lawful to take back the choice of electors after voters have already voted. But what concerns me is that there is a longstanding Republican narrative that's already in play in this election of voter fraud, that fraud is a widespread problem, and they will seize upon tiny episodes that look funny and say that the Democrats are trying to steal the election. Once you go from there, then the pitch, which is somewhat Orwellian, is not that they are substituting for democracy, but instead that they are enforcing the popular will, that they see that the people are trying to make a choice, the Democrats are trying to subvert it, and they are now coming to the defense of the will of the people of their state by appointing electors that were intended to be chosen in the first place. So they will cast this as a defense of democracy if it comes to that.
Barton Gellman is a staff writer for The Atlantic magazine and the author of the article, The Election That Could Break America. If you're going to steal a presidential election, it helps to have the Supreme Court in your pocket. With the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the rush to fill the seat before Election Day, President Trump is increasing his odds of winning with the high court. For more on that, I spoke with John Nichols, a staff writer for The Nation.
I think the rush to name a Supreme Court justice is hardly a surprising thing. We, over the last really 50 years, have had a great battle over the courts in the United States, and it obviously surfaces at some times and becomes very central to our discussion. But the important thing to understand is that it's going on, you know, decade after decade, whether it's on the front pages, whether it's in the news or not. And at the heart of that battle has been a attempt going back to the 70s by Republicans and by conservatives to remake the courts into something that is very, very different than what people learned in their civics books in high school or even in college. What they want the court to be is an activist institution that intervenes on a regular basis on behalf of economic, social, and political ends that favor big business, corporate interests, that favor a religious right, social agenda, and frankly, that make it much harder for the great majority of Americans to vote and much easier for a handful of people to vote in the places where they want them to vote. In effect, if you lump it all together, it's an anti-democratic agenda. It's an anti-democracy agenda. The vision is to say that the courts can be used in ways that tip the balance away from the will of the people and toward a very, very narrow agenda of a handful of elites.
The election that we're now into could go sideways and in a number of ways, and there might be some disputes about the legitimacy of the vote results. Whether that dispute is legitimate or not may even be irrelevant, but then it could go to the Supreme Court. We saw in Bush v. Gore that the U.S. Supreme Court is not above partisan politics and anointing a president. And with the court makeup that we have now and what we could see in the next few weeks with a rushed appointment to the Supreme Court, what does that look like?
It's important to reference Bush v. Gore because the Bush v. Gore case is the original sin. It's a place at which the United States Supreme Court intervened in a fair and appropriate recounting of ballots at a critical stage in a presidential election in a battleground state that would very probably and in fact did tip the result of that election. They stopped that recounting really just before it might well have clearly revealed who the winner of the election was. Now, there could be speculation about where that recount might have gone, but it doesn't matter. The fact is the court stepped in and said, no, it's going to stop at this point. That was crudely organized assault on American democracy. It was a horrible decision, indefensible, so bad that the court said, well, we don't really want this to be seen as precedent, or, you know, they had all sorts of ridiculous language in it. But the fact of the matter is that they did set a precedent, and the fear in 2020 is that a partisan court would, in fact, intervene at a critical stage in a way that would make it easier for Donald Trump to prevail in the election. Now, I say the fear is because, of course, we never know fully. Judges can surprise us at times. But if you add another conservative judicial activist to the court, and that appears to be what the president is proposing, then you will have on that court a 6-3 majority for conservative judicial activism. There might be one of those conservatives, Justice John Roberts, who could switch and maybe go with the more liberal members of the court. But you see, that's where we get into this zone of effectively a supermajority on the court, i.e. 6-3, even if one conservative does, you know, have a pang of conscience or a sense that they have to do what's right by the country, you'll still have a majority of conservative judicial activists who say, no, no, we're going to do exactly what we want. And so this is why the court pick, the court nominee at this point becomes such a big deal, because it takes us really very close to removing the safety hatch, the chance that a John Roberts might do the right thing. It's very, very dangerous for this election. And frankly, it's very, very dangerous going forward on a court where many of its critical decisions have been 5-4 decisions.
John Nichols is a staff writer for The Nation. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can listen to past Texas Matters episodes, and you can download us wherever you get your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.